And we appreciate you joining us for today's program. This is Brian Earle. I'm the host for the program, and Dan Drost, USU's Extension Vegetable Specialist, is in studio, and we'd love to take your questions or comments. Thank you to Ashley Tolman, who's filling in at the very last minute as our producer, and I just love Ashley. So I want to have a dozen calls so she gets all the work that she can do for the program. But Ashley's been great this morning. And Dan, you're great for coming in again at the beginning of the month. And boy, this is the
one of the
busiest times. So
April just will knock your socks off when it comes to just getting out in the garden and starting to do things.
And watching stuff pop.
Yeah, it really will come fast now. And hopefully over the course of, you know, the time we have today, we'll talk a little bit about some of the things that you need to be getting started with, and then also some of the things that hopefully you have started already. And if you haven't, then you can plan for, you know, doing some things as the time is appropriate. So,
well, what should be in the ground already? I suggested in the
I was thinking
peas, onions, leafy greens.
If they're not up, you know, you're behind the eight ball, because, you know, I was looking and digging, scratching around in mine, and my lettuce is up, and my radishes are up, and my spinach is up, and you know, I kind of have a small garden, because a guy that spends all his time gardening, so to speak. Some of my friends say that, you know, I spend all my time in the vegetable garden, and it's true, because I work with the vegetable industry here in the state of Utah and try to make sure that they're getting the things done. And so I don't do a lot at home, but, you know, I like to have those greens that go into my salads, and I get tired of the ones that you buy in the grocery store. I like the freshness of it. And, you know, I'm looking at mine, and, you know, they're up nicely now, and I've got a, actually, you know, they're drying out, so I'm going to have to start to pay attention to those kinds of things. And, you know, I'll start thinking about how to, you know, I might have to thin a little bit, you know, so I've got to kind of look around. But if you don't have your onions in, you know, this will be certainly in northern Utah, this is the last week to do that if you're going to seed onions. You know, usually we find that if you plant after, you know, apricot blooms in Logan, that's what my kind of indicator, and then my apricot tree is in full bloom right now. You know, it's the 15th of April is, you know, the dreaded tax day, but it's also the dreaded drop dead date for some planting things as far north as we are. Mm-hmm. And if you are farther south where it's much, much warmer, you know, you're kind of a little bit behind on some things. You start planting peas at this time, what happens? They flower right when it gets hot. And so the quality is really bad. They don't set fruit very well. The pods don't develop like we want. And so the same thing goes if you're seeding onions. The same thing happens when you're trying to plant lettuce. You know, those are March activities, and, you know, up until the first week of April, and you are about there. You know, this is the time to get out and try and do some of those things. And the later we do them, you just, the quality of the product goes off as the heat starts to come on in late May, and people say, well, you know, it'll be right, and, you know, you waste a lot of time. Why do something if you're not going to get anything?
And productivity.
Yeah, you know, you have to start on time, and I think we've been preaching this for 20 years, and, you know, the choir, you know, has sung along, but doesn't necessarily mean you hear the words.
And I've been in enough choirs to know that the director has to go over and over some things.
And over and over. And, you know, at times I get tired of it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's one thing when you get new people in, but the people that listen to this program all the time, and so they should almost know what I'm going to say before I say it, but that isn't all right. So get those seeded stuff in, and then probably a lot of you have started plants already if you're a plant grower and you're doing your own. You know, now is the time that you have to start watching how they grow. And, you know, it's one thing to get them started, but once that first true leaf starts to show, then, you know, there's a couple other things that you need to do. You need to make sure that there's got plenty of light, because otherwise those plants get stretched out and they stay thin. The stems are thin and weak, and when it comes time to put them out in the garden, they just don't really perform very well. And the second thing you need to watch for is that you have to start to feed them a little bit, because none of the medias that we use to grow plants have a lot of nutrients in them.
So if you've got something in a sunny window like a tomato, is that still not enough light?
Well, you know, in all
a south sunny window.
Yeah, all things being perfect, you know, it will get direct sun for a couple hours each day. But as that sun angle gets higher and higher in the sky, then the direct light that it's getting is not there. And so you get more diffuse light. And the plant then starts to respond to that. And one of the things it does is it just kind of starts to stretch. And so houses aren't really good places for raising plants. They're great places to raise kids. They're not great places to raise plants. And so if you don't have a greenhouse, and most of us aren't blessed with one of those, you know, this is where maybe having a grow box outside would be beneficial. Now, it's going to be a little bit more work, because what you can do is make a raised bed, but don't fill it with soil. Put a glass cover over the top of it, or a fiberglass, clear fiberglass, or one of those tough light types of coverings. You could put plastic mulch or clear plastic over top of it and create a warm environment, because the sun coming into that is going to create a warm environment. Plus, it's going to get out into the full sunlight. And on a day like, even if it's only 40 out, the temperature inside there's going to be, you remember the
30 plus rule.
Yeah, see, I've preached rules. You've learned the rule.
See, you, as a choir director, you are in this case the choir director, and I've been listening long enough that it's drilled in.
Yes. So that would be a better place to grow them. Now, the trouble with some of those outdoor ones is if we got them growing in containers or in flats or something like that, oftentimes at night yet, it's still too cold, and we really don't want a tomato that's growing out there. So there may be some of this move it in, move it out type of thing. But that would be a better place to actually grow plants than trying to grow them in a window. It would free up some space. It would allow you to grow more plants of yourself, and also create a nice environment. But you need to be thinking about what the conditions are going to be like today. It's supposed to be in the mid-60s today here. So if you left that structure closed, way too hot inside there.
So explain your 30-plus rule for those newbies.
Yeah. So the newbies are the temperature inside an enclosed structure that's catching full sunlight is going to be 30 degrees warmer than the outside air temperature.
So if it's a wall of water and
exactly. And so thing. I don't care whether we're talking about a milk jug, and I was going to talk about them a little bit later, you know, how to get plants to move along a little faster. But if we're talking milk jugs, if we're talking wall of waters, if we're talking about low tunnels, if we're talking about high tunnels, if we're talking about grow boxes, you know, that we would have out in our garden. I mean, my father always had a grow box. I mean, he didn't have a greenhouse, but he would sow the seeds in rows in those and then dig them up later, the broccoli, the mm-hmm. cauliflowers, mm-hmm. the cabbages, you know, the peppers when it was the right time. And at night, he might throw a blanket over the top of that to protect him, to try and trap some of that heat in there. But essentially, it was a box that was had walls of it that were about 12 inches high, and it had a old window frames with glass on them, and that's where he grew all of his plants, because he didn't have a greenhouse, and he grew wonderful plants. Mm. And you could do that in your garden here. The nights are not so cold anymore for a lot of our cool season vegetables. So if you're growing brassicas, broccoli, cauliflowers, those types of things, if you're going to grow lettuce transplants, if you're going to grow, you know, your own onion transplants, you could have started those that way, you know, months ago. And now when you're thinking about tomatoes and peppers and eggplants and in a couple of weeks, melons, you know, those are other things that could easily enough go in there. And you can create quite a large container to hold those plants and have covers on them that create the greenhouse effect and also mimic what a greenhouse is with very little expense to you. But you still have to manage it. You're going to still have to watch your watering. You're going to still have to feed these things. You're going to still have to manage the temperature in it. and do by doing that, you can save yourself a few dollars relative to what it would cost if you had to go to a local nursery or garden center and buy the plants that you normally plant.
Oh, but they're always going to taste better, whether they really do or not.
Yeah, you know, I think psychologically, we if we invest something in them, you know, certainly I think you know what's going into it then. You understand why it's so expensive. I have connections to New Zealand. I probably talked about New Zealand before. And I've been watching some stuff that's coming back. And right now they were complaining down there that a head of cauliflower is costing eight New Zealand dollars for a head of cauliflower. And people were just astounded as to why these prices are. And somebody wrote in and says, well, I was in Rarotonga, and it was $12 in Rarotonga, you know, when they went into the local grocery store. And the question came back is, why is it so expensive? And they were just saying that there are fewer and fewer producers in New Zealand growing this product, so there's a shortage. And as a result of that, you know, when it's the law of supply and demand. So there's demand, there's not enough supply, the price goes up. And these fewer and fewer growers, so how do you solve that problem? You grow your own if you want to do that. And then you know what's going into it. You don't know sometimes what's going into the production. Now, most of our growers are really, really careful about how they manage their crops because that's their business. It's no different than building a car. You know, if the local car company always made lemons, nobody would buy that car anymore, right? And so it's kind of similar with growers that we have to think about them as individuals that are craftsmen at what they do. And now you can be a craftsman too in your own garden and grow your own plants, and then you know, well, I know how I'm caring for them. I know what chemicals I might have to use on them or not use on them, and therefore I have a better sense as to how I'm taking care of my family.
Well, I wanted to – we have a question from last week. It was an all-produced program, but you'd be able to answer it really quite well. It's from – he says, hi, I'm a snowbird in my RV and have considered planting a container with radishes and maybe some lettuce. I'd like to know what the minimum depth of the growing container should be and also what lightweight growing media would be best for this project.
Well, in terms of the media, any of the potting mixes that you would buy at a nursery or garden center for growing any plant, whether it's a flower in a pot or your vegetables there. And as something that you're going to be traveling around with, in theory, you could grow a tomato and haul it around with you if you wanted to. Now, the problem with that gets to be that plant is pretty big. And if you're set up someplace for a relatively long period of time, that would be ideal. You'd want to bring it inside before you move on, and that would be into your RV rather than the bed of your pickup truck, so it doesn't get all blown apart as it's traveling up and down the roads that you're traveling on. But in terms of radishes, pretty fast turnover, probably would be better off with growing a mix of greens, you know, grow some spinach, grow some arugula, grow some mizuna, grow some spinach, all of those things. And then when you have it now, rather than a one commodity lettuce salad, if you grew all lettuce, you would have a variety of different greens that you could feed yourself with periodically. Now, the regrowth on them, if you have one pot that does this in, that might be enough for two salads a week. And then it would have to regrow, and then you would get equivalent of maybe one or two each subsequent week until the plant's kind of run out of gas, run out of production, so to speak. And they do. They have a limited life that you're going to get production out of those. But that would be an easy enough thing to do. Depth of container is less critical. So you could go with a relatively short container if you wanted. But it wouldn't need to be much more than 8 inches tall for crops like that, because that's about the rooting depth of a lettuce, a spinach, a mizuna, any of those leafy greens. And that's what I would recommend.
Do you generally avoid the cheap growing mediums that you can buy in a bag? In other words, the more you pay, usually the better it is? Generally speaking?
Not necessarily.
Because I've seen some with a lot of clay in it.
You want one that's probably peat and perlite and vermiculite based. You don't want anything that has soil in it. You really don't want anything with compost or something like that in it. So it's relatively inert, because then what you're going to really need to do is, when you're watering it, once the seeds emerge and the first leaf starts to show, that's when you need to go on to some type of feeding program to take care of that, because there are no nutrients in it. So you need a complete soluble fertilizer, which is also readily available, and follow the directions that are on that to feed it. And for many of these leafy greens, they don't require a tremendous amount of fertilizer, so it would be like a once-a-week program that you'd put some fertilizer into it.
So my next question is, what the heck is azuna?
Mazuna.
Oh, mazuna. Yeah. What is that?
Oh, it's a spicy kind of brassica is what it is. So it's in the cabbage family of plants, but it's a leaf and it's got kind of a peppery, spicy flavor to it. So that, you know, lettuce in itself, you know, is nice. It's got nice mouth of feel, but it doesn't have a lot of flavor to it. So what you're doing is, by adding some of that, some arugulas, it's related to arugula. So it creates a little bit more off flavors that add interest to the salad.
Is it a thicker leaf or is it more leafy green?
It looks kind of like a lot of the cabbage leaves.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you know what a cabbage leaf looks like and you know what a broccoli leaf looks like, it has that type of appearance to
it. So it gives it a little more substance to it.
Yeah. It's a little bit coarser, so it's got a little bit more mouthfeel to it. And then the spiciness that comes from the brassica family, the pepperinesses coming from the brassica family, just adds some additional interest to the salad. So making a blend of a bunch of different things, now you've got instant salad that you can just trim off individual leaves from, and you can have them all growing together because they all have the same growth habit. They're all leaves. They don't produce stems. None of them grow higher than each other. And so as a result, you know, it creates interesting leaf shapes too, so that it could actually look like an ornamental plant as you're traveling around, but it also has some functionality to it.
You're listening to The Zesty Garden. Dan Drost is USU's Extension Vegetable Specialist. We have him in here for about another 20 minutes. If you have a question or comment, the toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495. That's 1-800-826-1495. You can also send us an email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. So I'm going to back up just a little bit then and talk about the containers, this 30-plus rule. So you said today's going to be 60.
Yep.
About. So that means inside the container, if you keep it closed up, it's going to be 90.
That's right.
And usually, like tomatoes, for instance, they love warm temperatures. But I'm thinking, well, they're kind of young plants right now, so those kind of temperatures would probably, shock them, burn them a bit?
Yeah, so let's just make the assumption that, you know, today was a good day to plant tomatoes, right? And you put it inside some type of structure. Let's say you put a milk jug over top of it, 1 gallon. You cut the bottom out and you plunk it over. Or you put your wall of water up and you put it out. Or you build a small tent out of plastic with a little bit of wiring inside it to, you know, give it some form. And you bury that around the edges of the plant, and you have that plant underneath there. Or you build a little low tunnel, which, you know, kind of looks like a big greenhouse, but on an individual row size. You know, you take some wire and you stretch that across the rows, and then you put the plastic over top of it and seal the edges so that it doesn't blow away on you. All of those structures are enclosed in some way. And so what happens is shortwave radiation comes in from the sun, and it heats up the soil, and the soil in turn then will heat the air up, and eventually, over the course of the day, the plastic gets hot, or the wall of water gets hot, the water around the wall of water that's designed to hold heat gets hot, and that heat has to go someplace, and that plant absorbs heat as well. And we all know that there's a functional range in which plants do best. So our cool weather vegetables, if you did this to a cabbage plant, it likes temperatures between 40 and about 75 or 80 degrees. That's where it really likes to function best. Right around 65 to 70 is ideal. So if you could always hold the temperature there, or find some place to live that the temperature is always at this zone, it's perfect for growing those types of plants. Now, sure, tomatoes like it warmer, about 10 degrees warmer than that, 75 to 85 degrees, somewhere in that range is what they like. But at night, it's cooling down, and those structures cool down as well. So it's this oscillation in temperature that creates problems for plants, as well as the extremes. Okay, so it's 60 today. 90 might not hurt a plant, but it may not like it immediately after it transplants, because the root system, remember, our root ball is not very big. And we talked about the 50% rule, right, which says the root system should see 50% roots and some soil behind them. Then it's at the right transplantable size. But it takes time for those roots to grow out from that root ball into the surrounding soil and be able to pick up the nutrients that it needs there and the water that it needs there. And so you have to kind of watch for those types of things. And that's why it's a combination of stresses that impact how well that plant establishes itself. The main one that we often see is it gets too hot and the plant kind of starts to wilt because it can't get enough water up into the plant from the soil, even though the soil might be very moist. It just can't pump it up fast enough, so to speak. And other times it's a water stress thing. As the soil dries out, now the plant's under stress from moisture stress. So you got a combination of stresses that we're thinking about as we grow these plants. And our vegetables are sensitive at critical times as well. So transplanting is a critical time. You got to get it established so that it can start to grow. Temperature may not have as big an influence while it's growing the leaves itself because they tend to be more tolerant to temperature. But then as a plant transitions to flowers and flowers start to form on it, they may even be microscopic and you can't see them quite yet. Heat will cause injury to those structures, and so they may not come to bloom as fast as we think they are. And you just say, well, it's slow this year, and it might be just due to the temperature effect of being inside one of these enclosed structures. So managing that environment is critical if the plant is going to function effectively.
So is it enough then if it gets up to 60, 70 degrees during the daytime, is it enough to, if you have a wall of water, to just open it up?
Absolutely.
Okay. What if you've got a milk
what happens,
jug? You twist the top off. Is that enough?
Yeah, not always enough.
Okay.
That's not always enough. So what happens is, you know, hot air rises, and by opening that structure, that heat is going to migrate upward and expel itself. But you often need to replace it as well. And so that's what doesn't happen. There's not a lot of air exchange that's going on in there because they tend not to be porous in any way. And so sometimes it's better, like with wall of waters, you can open them up quite wide, and that's the smart thing to do. So during the in the morning, you know, it's going to get hot today. You may vent it or open it. If you have a tunnel, a low tunnel, or a hot cap, which a milk jug represents, something that's just an individual over top of a plant, opening just that lid might not be enough, and it can get super, super hot inside there, which you'll notice at a later date when you open it up and you'll see scorched leaves or the plant stunted in some way. And all of those things are indicative of heat stress. So however you vent them, you need to be thinking about that when you start to use these structures. That's why often I say putting a floating row cover, a remade type material, or a cheesecloth type material over top of it, you don't get as much heat underneath it, but it's also porous. And you don't need to worry about venting those nearly as much. But the plant doesn't grow quite as fast either. So, you know, we're always at this trade-off. We want the plant to come into production as early as we can. And yet you know, our time is valuable. You know, we may not be around all the time to manage how that that structure that we're using is designed to control the temperature. We don't manage the temperature appropriately because we aren't around. And so it's kind of like your car on a hot day, you know, that's the scenario. And so what do you do? Well, I'll leave my window cracked. And I still climb in the car, and it's still really hot because it's not enough. You almost have to have the window all the way rolled down, and we don't do that because there's safety issues.
There's so much energy coming in.
Yeah, and that little crack is not enough. So just twisting off that melt cap on that plastic thing usually is not enough ventilation. And the wall of water, you can peel open quite a bit farther than that. And that then now creates a chimney effect, and you'll get a lot more cooling inside that. But even then, we're doing some work with them, and I'll have more data on that in a month, looking at those temperature profiles within that structure. And my gut tells me that it's going to be pretty warm in the bottom.
So if I've stuck out a milk jug or a wall of water for a week and a half, 2 weeks, could I plant a tomato directly into the garden from seed right now if I've got that warmed up?
If you did a milk jug and just kept it closed, you could put seeds in underneath that, yeah.
Would it get too cold at night?
They're going to be a little slow, but in high tunnels, we normally would say if you start planting in our research here in Logan, we transplanted high tunnel tomatoes the first week of April. So that would be now, you know, regular 6 or 8 week old plants in the high tunnel, and essentially left the high tunnel pretty much closed except for a little bit of venting, and we never frosted them out once in all the years. Now, we did run into problems when we planted them in like the second week of March. You know, then we get some nights that are deep cold where the temperature is getting down to in the mid-20s or low 20s. But after the 1st of March, even here in northern Utah, we'll get some cold nights, but they're usually not cold enough. Plus, you've heated up that soil. There's a big soil environment in a tunnel that you're warming up. That holds a lot of energy and a lot of heat that comes off them. And those plants were just fine in doing that. And that's what we advocate our growers. Just don't really worry about it too much. You know, you got to watch it a little because there are some indicators, and you may get one night where it says, yeah, this is a powerful storm that's coming in. It's going to bring in some really cold temperatures. So when the climate scientists come and tell you that, you know, you better pay attention because those guys know, just like I know about the plants. And so our growers would pay attention to those, you know, forecasts. They might run a propane burner or something like that in, or throw some blanketing over top of those plants in order to protect them. And so you could do that. You could plant seeds in the, you know, now and get your tomatoes started right out in the garden from seed.
Never thought about doing that before.
Yeah. Just the wall of water that's completely closed up, it probably would do it.
Although I did discover last year that by planting my broccoli and cauliflower for a fall crop, when I did that at the end of June, boy, it was great.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Didn't have to start it indoors or anything, and it all took care of itself outside.
Exactly.
We have about 5 minutes left, 7 minutes left the program. If you'd like to get in a question or comment, Dan Drost, USU Extension Vegetable Specialist, is in studio. And you can call 1-800-826-1495 or send us an email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. So what else here in this last little bit can we talk about that be going in the ground right now?
Well, you know, I think the types of things that we're about to the end of the time for, you know, many of our, you could probably still plant carrots. You'd be okay with that. You know, if you start planting parsley about this time of the year, if you start planting, you know, plant potatoes, this is a great week to start planting potatoes in northern Utah. Usually the first week of April is go time for those. So get those things out.
It's not too cold. I was thinking potatoes needed to wait till the end of April, but you're saying it'd be done right now.
It's not too late.
Okay.
You know, there's a couple ways to speed them along, deal with it. you know, some plastic mulch over top of the beds. Just fuel the growth of those things a little bit more. Swiss chard is okay because it tends to stand up to the heat a little bit better. You still can plant your beets and those kinds of things. It's a good time to get going on the carrots. If you're going to direct seed out in the vegetable garden, you know, some of your brassicas are still a go on that, broccoli, but watch your varieties. Don't do long maturity type, do shorter maturity types. They may not, the plants don't get as big and the heads don't get as big, but you could still do some of that. A little bit early to direct seed things like, you know, your cucumbers and your beans and those. Some people along the Wasatch Front, some of our commercial growers are starting to plant some sweet corn pretty early, but they've got some really warm sites and some really sandy soils, and they're trying to get that corn before the 4th of July.
And so, I'm assuming it's not the super sweet varieties that they're planting, because that seed hates the cold.
Yeah, it's planting some of the standard sugary types that stand up better. So it's a little early for that. Beans a little early. But toward the end of this month, in some warm areas, or if you're going to use some plastic mulches over the soil to try and trap some of that heat, there are some growers that are using clear plastics. They sow underneath. They basically kind of dig a trench, plant the seeds in the bottom of the trench, and then they cover the trench with plastic, clear plastic, and that creates the greenhouse effect again. And so you've got an area that's in a notch in the soil that's below ground, but creates the wall of water effect underground, so to speak, and that way they can get early corn, early beans, and that kind of stuff. So after maybe the 15th, 20th of April here in northern Utah, that's a good time to do that. But if you're in St. George, you guys, it's time to start thinking about planting beans and planting corn and all of those kinds of things, because you're right on schedule. Look at your night temperatures are in the mid to upper 40s. Won't be long. You'll be into the 50s. Perfect time to start doing those types of things down south.
And it's something that I just, because I've learned from the, I'm forgetting the name of the rule, but when you're planting seed, and the thickness, what's the name of the rule?
Yeah, that's the three times
Thank you. The three times rule. So if you're putting in carrots, you're basically just going to be pressing them into the soil with your finger.
Exactly. And our soils after the rains are quite moist right now, so you don't need to sow them too deeply. And more rain's predicted for the weekend, which means if you can get out there today or tomorrow, ahead of the storm, you're more or less watering them right in. And so the soils are warming up. Use your little thermometer to kind of indicate that. And if you've got soil temperatures at noon that are, you know, getting up into the 65, 70 degree range, you can start planting some of these more tender crops a little bit earlier than you think. And if you use some other tricks like the plastic mulch laid over top of those beds, it creates a nice environment. The plants start, they germinate quickly, they can grow under there for a few weeks, and then by the end of the month, you know, when it's really nice, you're ready to go.
I always get better germination.
That's right.
The earlier
early,
I plant.
Early. And just as a shout out to Arla, happy birthday. She's a April Fool baby, so her birthday was last year. But she's a regular listener of this program, and I just said to her, I'll shout out to you today. So happy birthday, Arla, a week late.
So I wanted to ask in the last 2 minutes about asparagus. So my asparagus is going to be popping up here pretty soon.
I'm harvesting tomorrow. I'm eating
asparagus. It's already coming up?
In Kaysville, absolutely.
Oh, Kaysville. Okay, that's no fair.
But the local stuff isn't quite up yet here in Cache County. But if you're down along the Wasatch Front, it's time to start walking the ditch banks for those of you that need something, you know, meaningful to do at night while you're out there on your walk. You know, just walk the ditch banks wherever you can find them and look for wild asparagus. That's a great thing to do. If you have it in your own home garden, now's a good time to watch for it. If you need to put on some herbicides or something like that because you've had some grass problems in it and that type of thing, you know, go through and pick off the early ones and then spray right over the top of the bed with something like Roundup. That'll knock some of those early weeds back.
And it's not going to hurt the crowns.
Not going to hurt the crowns at all. It's time. And we'll just start to enjoy it here. I am so looking forward to some fresh asparagus tomorrow.
I have my third row will be in production this year for the first time. And so it's the Earl family vegetable.
I was looking at the stuff here on campus that I have in my research and nothing showing yet. And we got a little bit of bed work to do, knock the beds down where we've kind of filled things in and a new planting that we have before we start to harvest. But I got a little bit of work to do today before the storm comes. But tomorrow.
Okay. Dan, thank you.
See you.
You've been listening to The Zesty Garden. Dan Drost is USU's Extension Vegetable Specialist and is in the first Thursday of every month. Coming up next is Petals and Prose with Nancy Williams, and we'll have a discussion about, she's reading an essay about the Northern Flicker.